choice is in your hands.
Britain decides.
Most of the countries in the world are outside the European Union, and they're doing very nicely, thank you.
Britain decides.
I believe that Britain will be safer, stronger, and better off in a reformed European Union.
You're listening to Britain Decides, the EU referendum debate on TRE.
This is the most profound political decision of my lifetime.
Britain Decides.
With Stephen Ritson.
It's time to speak up.
Good afternoon and welcome to the second of our 10-part series on Britain's EU referendum, which takes place on the 23rd of June. I see the latest results on our online poll at talkradioeurope.com. 63.7% of you want to remain in the European Union, 34.7% want to leave, and 1.7% of you are undecided. This is, of course, unscientific, based on a single IP address logging in. And indeed, you by no means have to be British in our poll to have a say on whether you think the UK should leave or stay in the European Union. Now, each week, normally we'll be focusing on a different theme. In this, our second programme, we'll still be talking general swathes, trying to get the background, really, of why we're here at this stage of the game in our political history, I suppose, at the moment. Of course, we want to hear from you. You can call us right now on 952 78 4000. Tweet using the hashtag BritainDecides. Email studio@talkradioeurope.com or leave a message on our forum at talkradioeurope.com. A little later on in the programme, I'll be joined by Anna Firth. She's one of the founders of Women for Britain, which describes itself as the Leave campaign for all women who believe the UK will thrive as a free and independent nation outside the EU. But for now, joining us here on TRE are Petros Fasoulas. He's the Secretary General of the European Movement. That's a lobbying association that coordinates the efforts of associations and national councils. Their goal is promoting European integration and disseminating information about the origins of the European movement. They go back to 1947, in fact. Of course, it's evolved over the years. That's when the cause of a united Europe was being promoted, just a couple of years after the end of World War II. Also joining us are Chris Carter, Chief Research Executive of Get Britain Out. Get Britain Out describes itself as an independent, cross-party, grassroots, Eurosceptic group campaigning to get the UK out of the EU. They say they want to restore UK parliamentary democracy and take back control from the unaccountable bureaucrats in Brussels. So that our listeners know whose voice is whose, first of all, we'll say good afternoon to Petros Fasoulas.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're speaking to us live from Brussels, I understand?
Indeed. The weather here is a bit cold and cloudy. I hope it's better where you are.
It is in Spain. We've had our fair share of chill, but it's all right at the moment. And Chris Carter, are you in London at the moment?
Yes, I am. It's,
I understand.
Currently quite clear, but still chilly.
It's still chilly. I understand that the northeast of England has plenty of snow today, in fact, and some parts of northern Greater London as well. First of all, Petros Fasoulas, European integration. You want more European integration. This is something that many on the Leave campaign are afraid of. The word federalism in some quarters in British politics is considered a dirty word. Is that true? You want greater, ever greater political union in the EU?
The whole idea behind the European project is based on independent nations coming together to pursue their common interest and address the challenges that face them all in a manner that will produce better results for their citizens. And that's exactly what we're advocating. This is not about federalism or an ever closer union. It's about coming together, having a rational debate about the challenges we face and what's the best way to address them. And we believe that in many cases, like security, the environment, the economy, working together is much better in a big globalized world where we face continent-sized powers who are fighting for the same kind of resources we are.
Chris Carter from Get Britain Out, isn't that a reasonable thing? Better to be inside the tent, relieving ourselves outwards rather than having to fight from the outside?
Well, I find that a rather odd description of the European Union, which ultimately its sole game from the start was political union, the establishment of a United States of Europe. None of us on the Leave side are arguing that we shouldn't cooperate with our neighbours. Indeed, we stress that. But we feel the need to work with a wider world rather than just incorporating ourselves into a political union which cannot function and has failed in the major crises that face it, most notably the Eurozone crisis and the migration crisis.
Surely, I mean, the greatest example of a successful political union is, the very name says it, the United States of America, where working together, the sum is greater than the parts.
That's true, but, I mean, they all have a shared American identity. I think you'll find that Europeans, whilst we may all recognise ourselves as European, you'll find people are very, very different living in Britain than people living in Greece. The economies are fundamentally completely different, and so you can't expect this one-size-fits-all to work for a fishermonger in, for example, Britain, as it could do for an olive grower in Greece.
I think what Chris perhaps neglects to mention is that the core of the European project is that unity in our diversity. Nobody is advocating uniformity. In fact, it's our ability to come together despite our differences that has made the European project one of the most successful enterprises in the history of our continent. And as far as trading with the rest of the world, this is exactly what we're doing. By coming together in a family of 28 nations, we are better able to trade with countries like the US, China, Brazil, India, who are much bigger and eventually will be much stronger than we are if we were to face them as individual nations of 50, 60, 70 million.
So can you explain how Switzerland has access to 40 trillion of the world's economy through its own trade deals, whilst the EU, on the other hand, only has access to 7 trillion?
I suggest you scrutinize a little bit the kind of trade deals that Switzerland is signing before you reference them. The fact is that the market of 500 million customers is able to achieve better terms when it's negotiating with one voice than any other constellation.
So that voice is the European Commission.
Of the EU.
That European Commission is awful at negotiating trade deals. We've been trying for a trade deal with India for over 10 years. We've been trying with America for over 10 years. We've been trying over Canada for 10 years. And yet even the ones that we have on the table are looking likely to being derailed. The EU is useless at negotiating trade deals.
I suggest you get your facts right. The trade deal with the US hasn't been going on for 10 years, and the one with Canada is soon to be concluded. And both of those deals have the potential of generating enormous profit for the European Union as a whole and its individual member states. And as Mr. Obama said a few days ago, a trade deal with the EU is what the US is after, not an individual trade deal with the UK, which will only happen farther down the line, more than 10 years from now.
I would caution you to think Obama is equal to America.
From the European movement. The deal that we've done with Canada, I understand it hasn't quite been ratified, but is about to be, 7 years or so it's taken. Crucially there, the financial sector has been excluded. Now, we know for the UK, that's a crucial part of the economy. It's about, roughly, depends whose figures, 12% of British GDP. Similar, coincidentally, to the percentage of GDP in Spain dedicated to tourism. So we think of it as a big thing, but it's only 12%. This is a question that comes up often, why has the financial services sector been excluded in that deal between Canada and the European Union, Mr. Fasoulas?
There are a variety of reasons that have to do with professional services, the recognition of qualifications between the two trading blocks, and other details like that. Also, we have to consider the fact that we have a considerable advantage on financial services, not least thanks to the Citi, vis-a-vis other global trading partners. So they are reluctant to give in to some of the suggestions that the EU, with the support of Britain, makes on that area, and that's why financial services haven't been included in that respect. But there are so many other areas covered by those trade deals which affect other sectors of the UK and the European economy and have only been possible because we negotiated as a trading bloc.
Okay, well, Chris Carter from Get Britain Out, some of your, people in the same camp, because there are various organisations on the Leave side, as we know. Boris Johnson is one notable one who's mentioned on more than one occasion the Canadian deal. But if it excludes the financial sector, then that's a bit of a problem for the UK outside the EU, is it not?
Well, the key thing is that we would negotiate a deal similar to that deal, but that includes the financial sector. The reality is that the EU does not treat the city as one of its top priorities. It's one of its lowest priorities. In fact, it regularly goes out of its way to make it hard for the UK. So you look at financial transactions tax, for example.
But surely, if the European Union, if the UK were out, then all of that business that goes to London at the moment, I mean, Paris, Berlin, possibly Frankfurt, other places, but particularly those three, would be vying to have that business, would they not?
Well, they've been vying to have that business for over 20 years. The same claims were made that all this business would relocate if we didn't join the euro. Well, we're all now in the UK very glad that we didn't. And we see that many of these businesses are still here, believe it or not, and they will still be here after Brexit.
May I ask a question? Wouldn't you agree that the city has thrived over the last 20 years?
I have agreed that the city
indeed
would thrive.
And hasn't there been a period where the UK was a member of the European Union? So
the city has thrived because of the deregulation of the Thatcherite era. It was not to do with the EU.
No, but you just said that the EU doesn't consider the city to be a priority and it goes out of the way to hamper it. In fact, the city has blossomed because it is a part of the single market, because it gives it an open door to a client base of 500 million. And that, as a result, brings foreign direct investment into the city, lots of money that has made the city what it is, a great success for the UK and a great success for Europe.
I'd say the city has thrived despite our membership of the EU. So you're seeing the financial tax, transaction tax, the solvency
it doesn't apply to
directive,
the UK. The financial
which are
tax,
all coming
tax
into effect.
Doesn't apply to the UK. Again, you're getting your facts wrong, Chris.
No, they're trying to imply it into the UK, so don't come up with that. So essentially, what we're seeing is actually some things like the Solvency II Directive, which we've tried to oppose, and if we vote to remain, will be imposed upon us, is that we're seeing cases here where the city is directly affected by this. And Britain will remain in a hub and a focus for investment following Brexit because of the geographical benefits of the City of London.
Is there consensus on the fact that, I don't know how short-term or medium-term, that if the UK were to leave, that the pound would be devalued, which, of course, for many of our listeners receiving their pensions in sterling and spending them in euros, would be a problem directly for Talk Radio Europe listeners. Is there consensus on seeing a devaluation of sterling?
You would see a devaluation
Chris
in the short
Carter
term,
first.
Yes. You would see a devaluation in the short term, yes, but you would see very swiftly after that in the medium to long term, the pound would rise and the euro, I think we'll all agree, due to the crisis in the eurozone, which are only just beginning. I mean, Greece is looking like it's going to default by the end of the year again and require a second bailout. The Italian banking sector is close to collapse. So before you go around saying, oh, the pound is going to suddenly kind of plummet as a result, I'd say yes, temporarily. But the problems in the eurozone will see the euro plummet.
Petros Fasoulas, would you agree the pound will devalue?
Of course it will. And there has been significant economic evidence both by the UK government and independent international organizations who support the thesis. And like you just said, your listeners will feel that straight in their pocket. And it's worrying to see the Leave camp dismiss that by saying that in the short term. It would be interesting to translate that in pounds if it's possible. And the fact of the matter is that the short term might be a bit longer than we actually think, because there are many other factors that will impact British citizens living in Spain, including their ability to...
Well, I'm sure they're ultimately concerned about the success of the pound in the long run. I hope they're not just planning on claiming it over the next couple of weeks following Brexit. I mean, in the long run, their benefit comes from a strong Britain, and that will come from us leaving the European Union.
Mr. Fasoulas, surely if the pound did devalue, it's not all bad news. It means, of course, that it would be much easier for British exporters to sell their stuff abroad because it would be relatively cheaper. So that would be good for British manufacturing.
It's interesting you mention that, because over the last few years, the UK has been pursuing a policy that has encouraged the devaluation of the pound exactly for that reason, and we haven't seen an increase in trading. The fact of the matter is that some of the things that the developing world especially is asking, we are not selling. And that is why we are not doing so well in terms of trading. So the value of the pound doesn't necessarily improve our trading position vis-a-vis our partners. There are other factors there. And the one thing that enhances our ability to trade with the rest of the world is being part of a big, strong trading bloc like the European Union.
What you failed to mention there is the fact that Britain's growth trade is going from outside of the European Union. Our growth trade is going to countries like India and China, and it's not going to the European Union. I want us to leave so we can sign direct trade deals with those nations to encourage greater trade rather than focusing on the EU, which is the one continent, Europe is the one continent with the exception of Antarctica, that is not growing. Why would we want to tie
Chris Carter,
ourselves to that?
There comes a point where you can dismiss everybody's opinion. It would seem, and fair enough, maybe the other side would say the same, that if you don't like the opinion, you dismiss the source of that. But we've had the British Chamber of Commerce saying they think Britain should remain in. We've had the International Monetary Fund, not just Christine Lagarde, but various economists within that organisation saying Britain would be better off, not should, but would be better off remaining in. We had the President of the United States saying the same thing, specifically talking about being at the back of the queue. We know that very word caused controversy, whether it was put in his mouth because the Americans say line, but essentially that the priority is to get TTIP. That's for another day, TTIP, the merits of that. Just this morning, the OECD says that leaving the European Union will be the equivalent of imposing an additional tax of 1 month's income on UK workers. Obama was dismissed as a lame duck president by Boris Johnson and Michael Gove and Nigel Farage and others. Within less than 24 hours, Hillary Clinton said pretty much the same thing as Barack Obama. She's by far the most likely candidate to be president next time round. It seems that the Leave campaign, I think Vladimir Putin is perhaps the only sort of global figure that is with you on this.
Well, I mean, if we look at these organisations and where they receive their funding, we see they're hardly impartial. The OECD, for example, receives £30 million from the EU and supported us joining the euro. I hardly think that their views are kind of should then be taken as impartial and valued when we consider that.
Wouldn't it be better if you just refute it with arguments and economic analysis rather than...
Well, there are numerous economic arguments that
economic
argue would be better outside.
Point at one international organization that has actually said that the UK would be better off outside of the EU, other than, of course, Mr. Putin. And, of course, it would be interesting to see that evidence, if you can produce it.
Well, Open Europe, for example, has done several reports into Brexit.
This is a think
tank. That several scenarios could do well
interest.
If we follow certain solutions.
Sorry, say that again.
Open Europe has done several scenarios about what would happen post-Brexit, and several scenarios they said could lead to GDP gain. Of course, some other scenarios they pointed out could lead to GDP losses. So it very much depends on what we follow.
Open Europe builds itself as neutral, but Mr. Fasoulas, you were saying you had some criticism of Open Europe.
Indeed, the Open Europe is a think tank funded by private funders. I'm asking for an independent international organization who has produced any kind of...
So would you consider the OECD independent, considering the fact they get $30 million from the EU?
Of course I would do.
So you'd rather have organisations which receive funding from the organisation they are defending rather than private donators on their own?
Does the same apply to the IMF? Does the same apply to the US government?
Before you start going on the entire US government, then numerous US politicians such as Ted Cruz, for example, who would support Britain leaving the European Union and would support us in a trade deal for that. And we've seen several economic reports done by Capital Economics, for example, that argue Brexit would have very little impact whatsoever.
Do we know anything about Ted Cruz's foreign affairs credibility? I mean, he's talked about carpet bombing the Middle East. Maybe it's just a phrase, an exaggeration. Just a question for Mr. Fasoulas. One of the big concerns, of course, people in the UK and expats living in Spain, some might say ironically, addressing the issue of migration, considering they're immigrants in Spain, if you like, from another part of the European Union, is that there's a concern that when it was just a few rich countries, France, Italy, Germany, the UK and so on, the Benelux countries, that was one thing. But this far too rapid expansion, the Out campaign would say, with countries, not to pick on the people from those places, but the economies of, say, Romania and Bulgaria, there's such disparity that if you have this freedom of movement, because even though Britain's not in Schengen, EU citizens are free to go to the UK unless there's a particular criminal or terrorism-related issue surrounding them. They are free to go to the UK, and that has inevitably a pressure downwards on wages in the UK. And it is, of course, the poorest people in the UK, the smallest household incomes that are most affected by those often unskilled workers. That is a problem. The Albanian Prime Minister had a bit of a criticism yesterday, saying we're ready to join at any time soon. It's the same problem. That's one thing that affects people's lives on a day-to-day basis, Mr. Fasoulas.
It's yet to be demonstrated whether immigration has an effect on wages as such, apart from specific areas. But it's worth mentioning the issue of skills. In many cases, those EU citizens coming from other countries are here to fill gaps in our own skill set, including in healthcare and social care, which would suffer considerably if we were to close the doors and pull up the drawbridge. The same thing applies to our fiscal finances. For every pound of social services that an EU immigrant consumes, puts in £1.20. So the contribution that EU citizens coming to live and work in the UK into our finances is greater. And without that contribution, our own finances will suffer considerably. So rather than a drain on resources for the UK, EU citizens living there are contributing to the coffers of the UK Treasury and also bringing skills that are not currently existing into the market.
None of us are arguing that we're going to pull up the drawbridge. We just don't think there should be an open draw.
Chris Carter, I don't know if you can hear me, but the minimum wage or the so-called living wage, surely this is why this is important. If you have a living wage or a minimum wage, then as long as people are working legally, then it means that this is the same competition. A Romanian citizen, a Bulgarian, Polish, Spanish or British person in the UK, that's the key thing. As long as you have the minimum wage in place and a fair one, then it's not a threat. People aren't taking, £2 an hour instead of £8 or whatever it is.
I mean, I'd just quote the leader of the Remain campaign in the UK, Lord Rose, who admitted that wages would rise post-Brexit. We've seen Paddy Ashton, a leader figure, admitting food prices would fall post-Brexit. I mean, these are things that affect genuine, normal people. And these are the Remain side admitting that these things would improve post-Brexit. None of us are arguing that we're going to pull up the drawbridge and we're going to stop people coming from Europe. What we want is a fairer immigration system. Rather than saying anyone, just because you had the fortune of being born in Europe, you should be allowed in. Rather, we want a fairer immigration system, which has a points base, which allows people with the right skills to come and contribute and work in the UK. But we feel that we should have the right to control that.
Our listeners who are not retired, particularly listening in Spain, of course, it's not just British listeners, but there are 283,000 Brits officially registered on the Padrón Municipal, that's the registered at the town hall in Spain, and estimated to be about 800,000 who spend most or large parts of the year here in Spain. Many of those are not pensioners. They want to work in Spain. Surely this is, of course, a threat to the future of our listeners.
Not at all, not in the slightest. They will still work will be able to work and live in Spain. This is protected under international law. The Vienna Convention clearly provides for any rights.
Yeah, but only if they can prove that they're going to do a job that a Spanish or an EU citizen can't do. That's the way it was beforehand.
Anyone currently living in Spain, similar to any EU residents currently working and living in the UK, will not be forced out. That is not going to happen in the slightest.
Says who?
That is protected by international treaties, such as the Hague Convention and the Vienna Convention.
I hate to interrupt, but in the context of the renegotiating Britain's relationship with the EU in case of exit, the question of free movement will be at the top of the agenda. And if the kind of discrimination that the Leave campaign is suggesting towards EU citizens was to be applied, you can be sure that similar measures will be applied by our European neighbours.
How is it discrimination to treat them equally, people equally, no matter where they come from?
If you are...
It is discrimination at the moment against non-Europeans.
If you're stopping the free movement of people into the UK, you can guarantee that the free movement of people into the European Union will also be affected. And that will extend to people that live in the European Union at the moment, especially those that are not full-time registered residents, as is the case of many people in Spain, France and elsewhere.
We're going to have to leave in just a sec. I'd just like maybe the end, gentlemen, and I appreciate, of course, on behalf of our listeners, you both spending time with us here in Spain today. Maybe nice to end on if there is any way, any area where you could agree on, perhaps, for example, Chris Carter, perhaps, that if there were some dramatic reforms of the European Union that you would change your mind and would want to prefer to remain inside, and Mr. Fasulas, I'll come to you first, if there is there are aspects where you think perhaps there should be some dramatic reforms in the EU to appease those people that wish to leave. Mr. Fasulas.
The EU is a constantly reforming organization. In fact, its sole purpose is to find better and more efficient ways of promoting the interests of its member states and the interests of the citizens of those member states. We see that on every facet of the policies that it implies. And to leave the room where the decisions are made constitutes a major abandonment of the national interest. This is where we should be. We can form it, the UK can form it and can shape it and can make it into something that works better for the United Kingdom and its people.
All right, Chris Carter.
Well, I mean, David Cameron went to the EU saying, if you don't give me a good deal, and came back with nothing. I mean, I believe that Brexit will be the only way for the EU to get a shock into actually seriously reforming itself. It keeps promising to do it, but it never does.
On the contrary.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to leave it there. Appreciate your time. Petros Fasulas, Secretary-General of the European Movement, speaking to us live from Brussels, and Chris Carter, Chief Research Executive at Get Britain Out in London. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on Talk Radio Europe.
Britain Decides. TRE's coverage of Britain's EU referendum is hosted by Stephen Ridson, with expert guests, speakers from both sides, and your comments. Join in the debate on our online forum at talkradioeurope.com.
Welcome back. It's just coming up to 12:38. This programme is repeated tonight on Talk Radio Europe at 6 p.m. So it's roughly 6:38 p.m. roughly. Speaking, if you're listening to the repeat, remember we welcome your calls. Indeed, this programme is about you and for you. You can call us right now on 952-78-4000. You can tweet using the hashtag Britain Decides. Email studio@talkradioeurope.com or leave a message on our forum at talkradioeurope.com. We're joined by Anna Firth. She's one of the founders of Women for Britain, which describes itself as the Leave campaign for all women who believe the UK will thrive as a free and independent nation outside the European Union. I understand that you were launched on the 8th of March this year. Good afternoon, Anna.
Good afternoon.
The 8th of March you were launched. What's the point of having Women for Britain? Why not People for Britain?
We spoke to a lot of women in the run-up to our launch, and it was very striking that women were saying to us they really didn't feel that they had enough information, they didn't really feel that they had enough facts, and they weren't very impressed with listening to, you know, male, pale and stale politicians sort of slugging it out. So we decided that we need to have a space for women to, you know, a space where women can come and chat and talk and listen to other women, listen to people who are better informed about the debate and talk about the issues which are important to them. Because I think that women do have a slightly different take on the whole debate to men.
One of your co-founders with you is Priti Patel, the Conservative Member of Parliament, and UKIP's Suzanne Evans as well. There's a lovingly shot video of her on your website with Emmeline Pankhurst, of course, the notable suffragette who campaigned in the early part of the 20th century for women to be able to vote in Britain. But Dr. Helen Pankhurst, that's Emmeline's great-granddaughter, she's demanded an apology from you for exploiting her family name. She says, for Britain to move out of the European Union would have appalled her and her suffragette daughters. And she said it's outrageous for you to number Emmeline Pankhurst among your supporters.
Well, I think it's very unfortunate that Emmeline Pankhurst's relatives didn't come to our launch, because actually what we were saying at our launch, which again reflects something which a lot of women have said to us, is that women feel that they do have a special responsibility in this referendum, because other women did have to fight for us just to have that right to vote, just that right to take part in democracy. And that's not to say that the vote must be remain or leave, although we are a leave campaign. That's that right to actually take part in democracy. And that does, I think, give women, you know, a special reason for engaging in this debate, because one of the things that a lot of women are very concerned about is the fact that so many now of our laws and areas of national policy are being ceded to Brussels.
Okay, well, we'll come to that in a moment, and maybe we'll even have time to touch on the relative democratic merits of Europe versus the United Kingdom as well, and this phrase that comes up, these unelected bureaucrats, that
yes.
phrase. But first of all, let's bring in, yes. you've been kind enough to accept some questions from our listeners. Robert is in Michas. Afternoon, Robert.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
Fire away, Robert.
Well, I think there's two things. One is we have a number of people saying, let's get out, and they don't give you an answer. They give bland things. Oh, it's because of immigration, it's because of this, we can pass our own laws and everything else. But they don't tell you what happens if Britain goes out. There's a load of Brits living in Spain and other European countries that are pensioners, and they receive, through the apparent agreements with Britain and Spain and other European countries, to health on the Spanish National Health Service and other benefits as a pensioner. Now then, what we want to know is, what guarantees are you going to give us that our lives will not be affected because you have some idea that you want to come out, Britain to come out? No,
okay.
I think it's a stupid idea.
Okay.
I won't say any more.
Thanks for that, Robert. Thanks for your call. Remember, anybody else, 952-784-4000. Anna, what do you say to Robert?
Good afternoon, Robert. Thanks very much for that call and for raising such a really important point. And my answer to you would be that I hope that channels are making this clear to you in Spain, but the UK has many social security agreements with countries outside the EU, including the United States, including Mauritius, which provide for the annual uprating of your state pension. And that's all there on the HM government website, if you want to look that up. So there is no question of the UK government not having a similar arrangement with Spain if we come out of the EU, as I very much hope we will do, in June. Because, of course, the British government wants to protect the 3 million people that are living outside this country in the EU. So that is something which would...
I suppose, to be fair to you, Anna, that is, in fact... that would be a unilateral decision by the UK government, whether it's in the European Union or not, to decide to upgrade the pensions, to keep the pensions in line with inflation, or the increase in line with people resident in the UK, wherever they live in the world, whether it's in the EU or not.
Exactly. It's in our gift. It's also in Spain's interests that we have a good reciprocal agreement over all of these things, health, visas, and everything else. Visas, incidentally, wouldn't be an issue because EU policy has consistently been to waive visas between EU countries and wealthy countries outside the EU, like the USA, like Canada, like Japan. So visas wouldn't be an issue. I hope that point's already been made. And of course, the same thing.
So you're saying that pre-Maastricht, particularly. I mean, I remember it myself, living many years in Spain, but spending time studying in the UK. I had to apply to the Spanish Consulate General in London for a job in media in Spain, and among the criteria was that it was a job that a Spanish person couldn't do, and because it's a unique voice, whether you like it or not, then that wasn't really an issue in this type of work. But for many people it is. You say there'd be no visa requirements, but presumably
I mean, it's extremely remote. I'm a barrister by profession myself, so I've been reading up and making sure that I'm across the legalities here, and it's extremely remote. EU policy is consistently to waive short-term, holiday visa requirements between the EU and wealthy countries.
Well,
of course, those countries reciprocate the arrangement, and both of our countries, the UK and Spain, both have a healthy tourist industry, so it would be in both of our interests to reciprocate those arrangements. Yeah, and of course,
at a cost. I mean, we get on very well with the United States, but we all need a green card, and it's quite a tough thing. The green card lottery is such an attractive thing for many people for that reason, to go there. In countries like Norway, for example, which don't have to jump through so many hoops, but of course they pay a huge amount both in financial terms and, of course, in the amount of EU directives that they have to pass in Parliament in Oslo. To be fair to you, I won't let you answer me just yet, because we've got Kate on the line who has taken issue. Kate is on the Costa Blanca, in the east coast of Spain, and she's taken issue with something you said. Go ahead, Kate.
Hello, Kate.
Hello. Kate, go ahead.
Hello, Kate.
Hello. I didn't quite believe what I heard. This is about a few minutes ago now. It seemed to be saying, no, you pensioners are perfectly okay, and people who've got jobs here working, it's perfectly okay. They won't want to leave you, to lose you. Well, they just might, actually. And this is Spain I'm talking about, specifically Spain, but any other EU country. They could have very good and sore reasons for wishing to get their own back on a British government that has been, for the last 30-plus years, antagonistic to the concept. And the trouble is, you do seem to be saying, and for goodness sake, change it if this is not what you mean. What you said seemed to be, it's going to be all right, don't worry, and anyway, you can go to the Mauritius. I give you that back as advice for the next time you're talking to someone, okay? You don't mean that, do you?
Thank you, Kate, for raising that point. In relation to Mauritius, I was talking about the social security arrangement that the UK has for uprating pension. On the issue of residency that you've quite rightly raised there, that position is really very, very settled. I think one of the previous callers, previous speakers, actually alluded to this. It would be illegal under EU law for the EU to require anyone who is legally living in Spain to have to leave the country in which they're living in. It would also be against Article 70 of the Vienna Convention, so it would also be illegal under international law, and it would also be contrary to the Hague Convention.
I suppose, Anna, actually, you brought something up which is interesting, and I just, not fear-mongering, hopefully, but for any of our listeners who are not officially registered in Spain, who don't really see it as that important and crucial at the moment, but of course, should Britain vote to leave, if they've never been officially registered as resident in Spain, then those protections wouldn't necessarily apply to them. That's something to think about. Except that
you've also got Article 19 of the EU's Charter of Fundamental Rights, which states that collective expulsions are prohibited, and that's been interpreted by the European Court of Justice and by courts all in other member states to make exactly the same point, that people who are living already resident in another EU member state cannot be expelled.
Okay, well, to look into that, I'll take your word for that now. The collective nature and the sort of trickle expulsions might be one thing. But okay, Sharon on the Costa Blanca. Is it the Sharon I hear often on Viewpoint?
It is, Stephen. Hello, Sharon. Pleasure to speak to you after so long.
Good afternoon. What's your point, Sharon?
My point is that you're talking about we'd have to have an agreement with Spain. The payments that are made by the UK government for our healthcare, for example, and for our increases in pension, if we were to leave the EU, our individual governments would be perfectly able legally to withdraw the money that they currently supply for our healthcare, which is £2,000 to £3,000 per person per annum. They would be perfectly entitled. It's got nothing to do with Spain. It's that the UK government pays Spain, because it's in the European Union and Spain is in the European Union, for our healthcare every year. And the same for the state pension. If we were to leave the EU, they would not be obliged to pay that money for our state pension increases or for our healthcare. It's nothing to do with an agreement with Spain. It has everything to do with being in the EU. I'd like to listen to your answer to that, please.
Thank you. Anna, if I could just give you a moment to think about that. We just have to squeeze in an ad break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Britain Designs. TRE, Talk Radio Europe. You're listening to Britain Decides, the EU referendum debate on TRE.
Welcome back. I'm afraid it's very tight for time. Anna Firth from Women for Britain is on the line. And Sharon, I think, may still be there. But Anna, your answer to Sharon's point.
Hello, Sharon. I hope you are still there. I really want to reassure you on the issue of healthcare, because at the present time, there are 3 million EU citizens living in the UK. There are 1.3 British citizens living in the EU. So it's massively in the interests of the EU
to a good traditional... It's everything to do with the English government.
Yeah, but the point is, Sharon, that in 2013 to 2014, the Department of Health paid £750 million for the treatment of EU citizens in the UK. They only received, the UK government only received £50 million from the EU for the treatment of EU citizens in the UK. So in other words, it's massively in the interest of the EU that we actually arrive at a sensible deal going forward, which preserves your right to have free healthcare where you are lawfully living in Spain.
I'm afraid we're going to bring callers. Please call us next week, Sharon. I'm afraid we're out of time.
Right,
sorry about
do
that.
Do get in touch, Sharon, if you want any more information.
Thank you, Anna Firth from Women for Britain. Now, that's all we have time for. Next Wednesday, we'll be looking at the historical facts as well, how we got to this point. Dr. Joseph Lacey will be joining us. He's Junior Research Fellow in Politics at Oxford University. He's an expert in international politics. He studied the integration of countries into the EU. A Remain spokesperson will be Chris Bryant, the shadow leader of the House of Commons and MP for Rhondda. He believes Britain is better off in the EU because of the economic advantages that membership brings. Rupert Matthews is campaign manager for Better Off Out and the author of over 150 books on a wide range of subjects. So that should be a great show. The programme repeats tonight at 6 o'clock. It was co-produced in Marbella by Rob Humphreys. I'll be back tomorrow with Europe Today. But until next Wednesday, that's it from Britain Decides for now. Remember to keep posting on our forum at talkradioeurope.com. My thanks to Petros Fasoulas from the European Movement, Chris Carter from Get Britain Out, and Anna Firth, one of the founders of Women for Britain. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.